A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert?
I'm feeling like my heart will go on.
Okay, so in like Celine Dion?
Yep. I feel like the enthusiasm you and I have had for art, hopefully in some tiny, tiny way, may last beyond our lives. Hopefully the support we've given to artists means that their work will go on and on and on. And I'm definitely sure the artist we're going to be meeting today will be somebody that will is already sort of becoming part of the canon of the history of art.
Yes.
And is very deservedly so. She should be part of the history of art, because I think what she's doing is a really sort of exciting new take on painting and many different influences, which we will discuss in these very imaginative, dreamy, kind of futuristic, quite dreamlike paintings in a way. And I'm a big fan. So I'm really looking forward to talking to her. And I've never actually met her before. And we're recording this for the quarantine season. So hopefully one day we will get to meet in real life. But for now, we would like to welcome to Talk Art, Anna Benaroya.
Hello.
How are you,
Anna? Nice to be here.
Where do we find you at the moment in the world?
I'm currently in Jersey City, New Jersey. Right outside of New York, sitting on my couch in my apartment, which is
Are
where
you
I've
quarantined?
Been. I am. I've luckily been able to still walk to my studio, so I've been between my studio and my apartment.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. How far away a walk is it?
Like half an hour or so. Okay. It's actually quite nice. It's like a nice part of my day.
Oh, good. And do you feel like you have to go to the studio to connect with your work, or do you feel like being at home you can also use your home space to make work?
I like having the division. I think for me, going to the studio is like a nice is really where I think about my work. At home, I really like to try to relax and separate, kind of.
Yeah. So you find that going from your house to the studio, is it like a time when you get to think about the work that you're creating and you get to cultivate the ideas for where you're going to put your characters?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's like I always listen to music, you know, on my walk to and from, and it's something I look forward to. Kind of, I don't know, it's like this transition space between my home life and my studio life. And yeah, kind of like, I don't know if I think about my paintings as I'm walking. Maybe sometimes I do. But I really use it as a opportunity to kind of like just daydream and kind of like not think about much other than, I don't know, listen to the music and just like enjoy my walk if possible.
And is music a big thing for you? Because I see, A, it's a reference in the actual paintings itself, because I've seen a kind of recurring theme of things like flutes and pianos and sheet music for classical music.
Guitars,
or even contemporary music. Yeah, there's a kind of theme of that within your painting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of started coming into my paintings, I would say, like halfway through grad school, perhaps. I mean, when I was younger, I was like in all the bands in high school. I was in the marching band, in the jazz band, the concert band. So music was actually
What was your instrument?
I played piano initially, and then I played clarinet in the bands. And eventually I played trombone, baritone, which is like a trombone kind of in a trumpet form. So music was always a big part of my life. And then I didn't really even think to bring it into my paintings until one I don't know. The idea to paint two women playing piano came to me while I was in school. And these two women are playing one piano together, kind of like a duet, which I always thought was a funny thing. And that was just the beginning of it. And I think it just reminded me of how music has always been this thing in my life that has allowed me to kind of like escape from my body and just really enter my imagination.
That's amazing. But you're talking about these women playing the piano, but the women playing the piano in your paintings are very muscular and very, they're probably playing the piano with their nipples or their boobs resting on the keys, or it seems like their nipples are reading the sheet music in front of them. So these characters that you're bringing in with these musical instruments, where do you think these hyper-realized women have come from?
I mean, it kind of all started with actually the male figure and my obsession with learning all the muscles and learning how to draw the male form. When I was younger, I was looking at cartoons and a lot of superhero comics, movies like James Bond, Indiana Jones, kind of like these stereotypical male hero archetype characters. And I really identified with them.
Alpha males, yeah.
Yeah. I identified with them so intensely, like over the female characters often. And I think as a kid, you don't really like think about these things or analyze yourself too deeply. But like later on, I think I just like really, I think I wasn't like seeing examples of like women in these roles that I like admired. I know that's really like weird thing to say, but I think like when I thought of who I wanted to be in these movies or in these comics or in the media I was watching, I always like kind of identified with the man. And I mean, maybe part of it also was like, I don't know, unrealized, like not realizing that I was gay at the time. And maybe that like my mind was working around that in some weird way by like identifying with the men. But yeah, so anyway, that's a long roundabout to your question.
It reminds me to an Instagram post you put out recently of a painting called Hot House. And it says, you've quoted as saying, "I find myself living vicariously through my paintings these days." And it's a woman at a piano. It's a room full of female figures. Three of them got their breasts out. One of them's playing the piano. She's got a massive butt on her, giant like proportions. They've always got huge hands and huge feet, and it's amazing. But these characters, are they projections of how you want to see yourself, or are they how you want to see the world? Or
I think it's a mixture of both. I think for me, I started depicting these women that are kind of both simultaneously voluptuous and sexy, but really muscular and powerful. Because it's not because that is what I want to look like or that is even necessarily what I'm attracted to. It's a way that I've found to, I don't think people have depicted women like that before. And I think it's a way to make them, in my mind, it's a way to make them both sexy and appealing and yet powerful and kind of in control of their bodies. And just like, I've always, I guess, my imagination has always been louder than my personality. And I think like maybe those big bodies are part of the loudness, and the color also could be part of that. There's something to that I think, like being able to make these kind of images that kind of scream at you and are
almost
bold.
Neon at times, the bright colors, your color palette.
I also really like the kind of theme almost within them, because there's a kind of element of them being like superhuman or superheroes. And you know, you were talking about those films, you know, from the 80s, 90s, I guess, where you didn't have often the protagonist or the lead character, the person that saved the day, was often a man. And then I think later in film, you began to get people like Angelina Jolie, who would start to, you know, Lara play Croft and stuff, kind of. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then since then, obviously, more and more, you've even got like Wonder Woman now, you know, and
Ghostbusters
and films,
female-led and stuff. Right.
Exactly, which we all really appreciate and love. But I think it's taking so long for Hollywood to kind of shift. And in a way, art, history, you know, since the 60s, with sort of proto-feminism and then feminism through art, you've kind of had this more recent history of a development which is much faster than kind of cinema. And I just really appreciate that in your work, because I feel like you're taking it somewhere else again, and there is a strength to the women in the world,
dominant,
which is incredibly
proud,
inspiring.
Aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's true what you're saying about the movies. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and so that's like, those were my formative years, and it's true how dramatically different even today, like 15 years later, things are, and what kids are watching. And I do wonder, like, how would I have felt differently if I was 10 years younger? Yeah, I mean, I think, like, to me, like, there is this superhero-esque thing that I fixated on, and all the women I paint are naked. I never really thought of, like, clothing them. And I guess that's kind of strange, but actually superheroes, I mean, what is their outfit? It's just kind of like this spandex thing that is essentially their skin. So maybe that's like, I don't know where I took my cues from.
But their outfits are always muscled up, aren't they? You look at Batman, you look at Superman. Out of these costumes that the superheroes have, they don't have, they have muscles built into the costumes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just essentially a colored skin that they don. So.
Yeah. So let's go back to how you got into art. So you started off in illustration, right? And you illustrated some really big brands.
Yeah, I did study illustration undergrad. I worked as an illustrator for 10 years doing like editorial, like stuff for New York Times, different magazines, Nickelodeon, MTV. And I loved it. I mean, I was drawn to illustration, I think, because I liked that it had this connection to modern, to contemporary culture, and that it responded to it directly. I liked that you as an artist never really knew what you would have as a prompt, and you kind of had to like learn each time you got a new text or find a way to apply your vision to these different subjects. And I was interested that was like a very open dialogue, and that also, I liked the part about it where it was non-pretentious and it kind of was accessible to anyone in a very unintimidating way, which I always felt the fine art world felt very intimidating to me. But yeah, I eventually like came to realize that the work that I was making that I was most excited about was usually self-directed. And so I just began to focus more and more on my paintings, until I decided to apply to graduate school.
So how did you make the shift between like illustration and becoming a fine artist? And how do you feel about the snobbery between that?
Yeah, it's something I still think about a lot. I mean, to me, the shift is just in the fact that I now make paintings, and I don't necessarily have an art director other than myself. But as far as the way I think about my work and the way I think about myself, I don't think it's changed. In applying to the graduate programs, I made a whole new body of work, and I put on a one night show in Brooklyn, and pretty much that was the work that I applied to school with.
I heard about that, because didn't you hire it for the night or something, the venue?
I did. It was like $100 for one night.
That's right,
and I hung the show and took the show down in one night.
That's so cool.
It was quite fun. It was actually really fun. I also had a merch table, which I like was very, I guess a remnant of my illustration days, but there was something there that I liked about that, you know, that anybody could come in and afford something to buy.
Yeah, kind of like setting up stall and making it
like
possible for everyone
and tote
to have
bags
something.
And stuff.
But also, you've made a lot of zines, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I've had a few zines, and those were there. And I have made t-shirts, I made socks.
Socks, yeah.
Yeah, socks.
Like neon tube sock type things.
Yeah, like they go up to like right below your knee, kind of. And
And were they painted on?
No, they were like manufactured. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Cool.
So how many painted did you have in this show?
Quite a few. I'd say maybe 20 paintings. God,
wow. And did you sell any? Did anybody, were they for sale or was it?
They were for sale. A few sold, not a lot. But they were all gouache paintings actually. And they were, for me at the time, they felt very large, but they were only like 2 feet by 3 feet, which is very small, which is relatively small now. So it's just funny how different I view scale at this point.
So let's talk about scale then. So you love, you work in a big scale, right? That's what you're drawn to.
Yes. I love to be able to kind of depict the women at life size or larger than life size. It's something that I don't know. It just seems to make sense for my work, to be able to enter these scenes and deal with these women, as like someone who's like similar to your scale or slightly larger than. It's something I never really thought about when I was an illustrator at all, actually.
Well, I guess with illustration, it's smaller as well, though, isn't it? Because it's in like, you can almost hold newspapers in your hand or magazines or posters.
Well, I just feel like these characters are so big that I guess on a big scale, you want the space to contain them, but you want to be able to really push them, their proportions.
Yeah, no, I think playing with their scale and also with distorting their figure. I guess that's something else I think about a lot is like these muscles that I used to always depict on men. We view them as natural and as like this ideal form, but really they're like distortions to the figure that we like view as beauty. And for the longest time I couldn't figure out how to distort the female form in a way that I thought.
Before you came to muscles, did you try anything else?
You know, I like completely was blocked. I like literally didn't draw women. And I always felt like the male form had a lot more liberty and allowed a lot more liberties that you could take with it and yet it would still be this attractive figure, whether it's like face or body. But with women, I felt like there was such a narrow definition of what was an attractive woman that I was like, I felt so constrained by that. And obviously that's like me taking on a lot of societal beliefs about beauty.
Yeah, but there's also like a long, long, long history of the female nude, you know, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in all different ways, always painted by men. And what I found really interesting was some of the work you did that wasn't female as well, because you actually painted men and kind of hypersexualized in some ways as well, which was really interesting to me because you don't often see that as much in the history of art, but you obviously do in more recent times because
Artists of our era. Influence on the male characters. But you've took it beyond because the Tom of Finland characters, your ones have very long penises that kind of stretch up and become instrument-like that they're kind of playing or blowing into.
Yeah, I mean, I took a lot of joy in depicting men in that way. It was just like this, like within my, it was kind of like I was God in this arena of my paintings. And I took sick joy in like sexualizing and playing with these male figures. And I still do enjoy it, but I guess there was some shift in me recently where I felt like more compelled to find a way to depict women in a way where I identified with them.
Right.
Yeah. But I think there's still a place for painting men. I'm just not sure yet how it'll come back in, but it will eventually.
I also find it really interesting the way that you've used things like cigarettes and smoke, and then also obviously you've got the idea of sound. I saw one of the paintings had a flute which even had like paint splatters at the end of the flute, so you've you've got this kind of sense of movement in the paintings, and then also bodily fluids and, you know, like milk from breasts or you know, sperm, even, like, you know, squirting out. You've got this kind of sense of bodies creating something. Can you speak a bit about that element of it all?
Yeah, I I guess the smoke is a recent development, but I was drawn to it, I think, just as a visual thing. Smoking always looked cool to me, and it's something I've never done, but I've always, and I think I'm like often attracted to things that I am not. Right. And so I wanted, and I felt like, I don't know, there's all those like cheesy photos of CEOs with cigars and men with like cigarettes. And I feel like it's like a power move. And I thought like, if these women are smoking, they're just going to seem more cool, more sexy, more powerful. Mm-hmm. But also visually, I think depicting smoke was an interesting thing in my paintings. It was this transparent, it's a transparent thing that is formless and kind of plays off like these voluptuous, very formful figures. Mm-hmm. And I liked the idea of it being this kind of like an invisible dialogue box within the painting, like kind of like comic, yes, like a dialogue, like a
speech bubble. Yeah.
But it's funny you mentioned the breast milk, because like I haven't done that in a while with like the projectile milk, but I like,
yeah,
it's something that I just think is hilarious. And I just like, I've always had the strange like fantasy that I wish that women had that power, like that they could just like shoot toxic breast milk on command as like this like weapon.
Spider-Man, like Spider-Man for the nipples, yeah. Webbing. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah.
I also loved one of the paintings. I think Russell mentioned it before, maybe Hot House, but the way that one of the women in it has like almost something coming out of her mouth, kind of like projectile kind of fluid coming out, yeah, of her mouth as well.
Yeah, like I was thinking like it could be her voice, it could be other smoke, it could be something else. And yeah, it's like this way of bringing like an abstract element into my very figurative paintings.
Mm-hmm. And there's a dark humor that drives through it all as well. But I feel like you really play with the power of humor that's important to you in the message.
Yeah, I think it comes from just, I have a dark humor in my day-to-day life, and it's like it's a way of like coping with reality, which I think a lot of people do. But also I think it's something about humor that I think doesn't take itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. And I do think I'm a serious artist, but I also never want to take myself so seriously that I become kind of this not self-aware person. I think humor keeps us self-aware. And I think that in my paintings, I want them to be self-aware. And I think, I don't know if that makes sense, but I think there's like this balance of like dealing with these issues about being a woman and feeling powerless and trying to find ways to feel powerful through these paintings, but at the same time, allowing the humor to kind of invite people in and not be too serious. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I mean, talking about feeling, you know, powerless, there's a series of paintings you've done of baseball players where the baseball players are women, you know, just about to sort of hit the baseball. Mm. And it really brought back memories of that film, A League of Their Own, with, like, mm-hmm, very obviously directly. But I remember when that film came out, how powerful it was to me to see women. It's almost like those films when men go to war and then suddenly women, you know, left the domestic household,
yes,
and went and did all the jobs way better than the men did anyway. And
they're
those
not
kind
doing
of films.
Women's work anymore, yeah.
Yeah, and so, when they're, you know, able to actually, you know, run things. And I find those paintings incredibly inspiring and exciting for that reason.
To me, like, sports has also been another fixation. I used to collect a lot of sports cards when I was younger, and really was also obsessed with athletes, all male athletes. And I think it was just, like, another arena that I felt had the central part of our American culture. It had, mm-hmm, it, so much money was behind it, so much respect. These players got so much respect, and they were these like idols, and there was just nowhere for women in there. And it was like this world that I desperately like wanted to be part of and knew I never would be. And obviously like the male figure again reappears constantly with these muscular bodies. Mm. So I think I did a lot of I was very interested in depicting athletes, and I did a lot of paintings of male athletes, but yeah, those paintings of the women playing baseball were the most recent. And I think that is another subject that I think I will delve into again more deeply.
Great.
I like the idea of creating these alternate worlds and the a baseball team, a baseball field, or whatever sport it might be is a world that I think could be fun to play with, kind of similar to that like the imaginary cafe that I created for the show in LA.
Yeah, like
the
a jazz
music
cafe.
Paintings.
Oh, right. What was that? What do you mean?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Oh, okay. So the series of music paintings, I kind of imagined that they all took place at this imaginary cafe.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously some are more like the piano scene that you described earlier. That's like a very specific depiction of a place, but others were more dreamlike. And, but I still imagine that they all were in the same space together.
Well, there's so many references in it. I was just going to say, like, talking about the sports, is that your works harness an energy, and all the characters feel like they're on the edge of something about to happen, whether it be sexual, whether they're about to wrestle you or grapple you, and they have like an S&M dominating quality to them. That's important to you to keep the energy harnessed in those, so they're buzzing. I guess that works with the colors as well you choose.
Yeah, I do think that there's something there. It's kind of like this like forever explosion and tension that I have inside of me that I never fully get to express in any other way, and it comes out in the figures in my paintings. And I do think that, like, in our worlds, you know, these like really base instincts guide our societies, like sex, violence, you know, like, and then of course desire for human connection. And I think those like are the reason for so many human actions, and yet we suppress these things, you know, deep underneath, and kind of don't even address them most of the time in day-to-day life. And
totally.
In my paintings, I feel those things are always present, and they're always like at the forefront in some way.
So how has the current climate then affected your work, if it's because the things that you're longing for are being restricted? Has it changed your work at all, or your energy towards the painting?
It's a good question. I don't know yet. I think like I my work has been so really like based from my imagination that that hasn't changed in a sense. But
right.
But yeah, I do think that sometimes, like, I think oftentimes I work through things in my paintings emotionally before I work through them in my own life, and it takes a while. And so maybe it might be some time before I like can realize how this current climate is affecting that.
So we touched on it at the beginning that you identify as queer. How does that, how important is that? Obviously you're saying in your childhood you were affected by the male figure and how that has played out in your art now. How has being identifying as queer played into your work, and how much of your work do you want to consider to be linked to that?
I mean, I do think it affects it a great deal. I can't say it's always what I'm thinking about with what I want to be like the central part of the work. But as a person, I think it has affected me greatly, just in that, you know, I think for a long time, I didn't want to depict any sort of like queer desire in my paintings, out of my own discomfort from accepting that within myself. And also, like, I even had this, you know, I had like the strangest thoughts. Like, as a kid, I would think, oh, I have to make sure that all my paintings, like, no one guesses that a girl drew it. And then later, I would have the weirdest thought of like, oh, I can't depict queer love or queer attraction because no one wants to see that. No one would want to look at that. And, you know, these are terrible thoughts that I had, but they were regardless.
But they're natural thoughts for queer people. I mean, everyone has them thoughts that you don't,
yeah,
you don't want to be exposed. Keep it kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And these are things I didn't even realize that I was thinking at the time. Looking back, I realize it. And I do think, like, only as of recent, with the depiction of these women, I am starting to look to my own experience and my own desire and not avoid it.
Well, talking about desire, there's a series of paintings as well where you paint different figures kissing. Sometimes they might be what appears to be two men, two women, or, different
non-binary
groups of people.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like non-binary, just beings, I guess. But you often see them in different states of kissing, and sometimes it gets so intense and you feel this kind of overwhelming strength of the desire that they almost start to become kind of cannibalistic and like eat each other.
Yeah, they devour each other's faces.
Yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, so it's danger. Really... And you might also have bits of paintings where like the paint almost becomes like marbling effect, like where the two faces are becoming one in some kind of collision of planets or something. Kind of, where did that whole series come from with this kind of cannibalistic, intense explosions?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the series of five canvases where the one person eats the other after they kiss.
Yeah, yeah. So I've developed a taste for my own kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
That, you know, I guess I've just always been interested in the kissing. Kissing as a subject of painting. It's like we touch the small part of our body together, and it's like strangely intimate. But visually, I think it's interesting is like the merging of these bodies together. And I have this other series of paintings where these two men are kind of fighting each other, but it's erotic, and their bodies eventually merge into one.
Right,
and that's another thing that I've been thinking about recently is just how can, I think like I mentioned like muscles as distortion on a body, but how can like the merging and the conjoining of bodies be this extra layer of like, of desire or violence or intimacy? And yeah, I haven't fully worked out exactly what I think about it, but it's visually very interesting to me.
I find them fascinating because there's a painting called Tangled and another one called Cross-Eyed, and they're both just so intense, just the way that the faces are like, they almost become one face. You've got one eye from one person and one eye from another person.
Well, I guess
and then
there's
both
love
hands
in there.
And,
if they are,
yeah, there is, totally.
I guess there's love with like a yin and yang type vibe where you connect. When you're connected to someone, then you become one.
Yeah, I think it's like this intense love that you can't get out and communicate clearly, but sometimes like the physical communicates it clearly. And
Right. Yeah,
I think there are no words in my, and I think that's like, I struggle a lot sometimes with like finding the right words, but in my paintings, I feel like my figures don't have to talk, but physically they can show everything that they're thinking or feeling.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So is it autobiographical, a lot of the scenes or the setups that you've got in here, or
part of, you know, but there's always like partially, like I would say like autobiographical, like slightly maybe in some emotional sense, but my life is very like mundane, so it's not like it's like maybe a dramatized version of that, a more fantastical
the movie version.
Kind of heightened,
yeah. Yeah.
Who are your big inspirations? Who are your art inspirations? And I'm really interested in the cartoons that you watched as well, because Juxtapose magazine, which you were recently on the cover of, which was a stunning cover, described your paintings as Nickelodeon cartoons on steroids, which I love that quote.
who are your, like, because there's so many references I can recognize and see, and then you've got obviously got your own language. Who's important to you?
I mean, growing up, there was like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ren and Stimpy, the Animaniacs.
Yes.
What's it called? Stinky in the Brain or something? Yes. Something in the Brain.
Pinky in the Brain. Yes.
Yeah, and I did look at like Marvel and DC Comics a lot. I loved Spider-Man and the X-Men.
Yes.
And truly, actually, like looking at my sports cards that I collected, that was like another visual reference point. And from that, I would say I eventually like grew into just being interested in illustration, a lot of illustrators, a lot of commercial art, and specifically like concert posters, like gig posters that were screen printed, hand lettering.
Gig posters that you remember in particular, like particular bands?
I know Wilco has a lot of really interesting posters, but I would just like, I would always visit gigposters.com. I don't know if that exists anymore. I would just look. There's so many amazing posters. And,
type in the band you loved and then they would all come up? Or
yeah, and you could order them for like $3.99 or $10 or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could order them. I used to order them to have in my house because I was obsessively collecting music posters back then. That's fun.
Yeah. And I'd go, there was, when I was an undergrad, there was a local venue called the Auto Bar in Baltimore, and I did some posters for them. And whenever I went there for concerts, just the walls, I love the aesthetic of like the walls, like pasted with all these different concert posters. And so that was a huge influence for me. And, I studied art history in undergrad a little, and then I just started learning more and more about that. And I would say only recently, like in the past 4 to 5 years, I've started looking at other fine artists and painters as well.
Like who?
Let's see. I mean, I love Tom of Finland. I'm a big Carol Dunham fan.
Yes, I can see Carol Dunham's work. Yes.
Yeah. Peter Saul, like visually, aesthetically, I love.
Did you get to see a show before the lockdown at the New Museum?
I did. I was very lucky. I saw it like the first week.
So good, wasn't it?
Yeah, so good. Trying to think.
Did you say Nicole Eisenman?
Those are the big ones. Yeah, Nicole Eisenman.
Oh, she's
just like, I think narratively. Yeah, so like really.
Yeah. I mean, I often think of Chicago Images as well when I see your work.
Yeah, Jim Nutt. I can see, like, especially the color palette, his work, I can see really playing into your language.
Yeah, and Carl Worsam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Gladys Nielsen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so awesome. And what about your contemporaries, like your peers? Do you have a group of sort of friends that you're sort of part of an artistic group of people? Because I saw you share a gallery in New York, Ross and Kramer, with an artist guest who's been on Talk Art before called John Key.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My upcoming show is going to be with Ross and Kramer, actually.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends are really from my time at Yale, and this may sound strange, but I didn't really have a lot of artist friends out, before I went to graduate school. I still have close friends from my undergrad years, but some of my classmates, like Rebecca Ness, Blair Whiteford, Dominic Chambers, but. I'm only recently kind of like going out to openings and doing the whole art thing in New York. So it's all kind of somewhat new to me.
Yeah. What does it feel like now then to be on the cover of Juxtapose magazine and also to receive attention and to sell your work and collectors? How does it all feel like for you?
I mean, it's very surreal. It's kind of like, I kind of like don't believe any of it really. Like I know I'm still at the beginning and there's a long way to go, but just like for 10 years, I feel like I was an artist and I graduated and I made art and no one paid attention to me, outside of the illustration world. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden to like have this interest and attention is like very surreal. And it's like really, it's like a dream come true. It's like, to finally be taken seriously, which is like what I've wanted, really.
Do you feel any pressures from it all?
I mean, not a pressure to change, but just like, you know, I want to continue. I want to have a long career. I want to keep working and making art for my whole life. And I hope that that's possible in some way, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like when you create paintings, do you feel loath to let them go? Or are you quite happy to create and then put them out in the world and then keep going?
It depends. Some paintings I'm way more attached to than others.
Yeah.
But I do keep like one, at least one painting from each body of work for myself just to have.
Yes.
And, but it does give me like joy to think that other people want to like have them and enjoy them as well. And that they're like living in other homes. And I don't know, there's something really nice about that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
When is your next show then? What is this show you're working towards?
My next show is going to be a solo show with Ross and Kramer in November in New York.
Great.
They're going to have a new space in Chelsea. And so I'm very excited about having to show in that kind of space. And I'm just kind of beginning the work now on the paintings. But uh-huh. my idea is kind of starting around the idea of like a salon, like an apartment style salon where like Gertrude Stein, Florence Stettheimer type environment where women are coming to this domestic space and they're gonna drink, they're gonna smoke, they're going to talk about art and culture and music, and they're going to, I want them to paint, I want them to sculpt other women, I want them to also like make out with each other and have these yes. like sensual moments. So it's kind of like that's like the scene that I'm setting, and I'm trying to figure out what moments to show in the paintings right now.
How many do you think you'll show? How many do you think you want in there?
I mean, hopefully 10 to 12, depending on size, maybe more or less. But I want a good number of them to be pretty large paintings. Because I'm enjoying the challenge of fitting the multiple figures into one scene. I think that yeah. the painting we talked about earlier with all those women in the with the piano and the guitar, yeah. and there's something that happens with that, and it's a challenge, and it's interesting to me, and I think the large scale allows me to do that.
And how long do they take to create your paintings?
A large painting takes 3 to 4 weeks of like on and off work. I do like, my studio is actually relatively small, and so it makes it difficult to work on a lot of large paintings at once. But mm-hmm. I work in layers, and I always just respond to what I have on the canvas. So sometimes it takes me a while to just think about what the next thing is to do.
Mm. And do you ever create voices for your characters, like as your love of cartoons and comics and stuff? Do you ever give them a noise or a sound?
You know, I've never thought of that before. I always think about them as just like these like embodiments of emotion, really, that right. they're just purely full of emotion, mm-hmm. and they've taken physical form, but never a voice actually.
In emotion, in like what, like a Seven Dwarfs sort of emotion, like quiet.
Kind of like operatic type emotion, like whether it's just as simple as just full of anger, full of sadness, full of desire, full of lust, full of. I guess those are the typical ones I depict, but just like this, I don't know if you ever feel, I'm sure you have, but like felt like you just are exploding with this emotion that you can't even express in any way. And I want them to have that feeling.
And do you know when you're creating them, what the emotion is going to go into each one of the characters, or do they sort of just bubble up from you and then you're like, oh, well, hang on a minute, that's got into them?
I usually have a general idea, but as I'm painting it, it does evolve. And probably like depending on how I'm feeling, it obviously affects the painting as well.
Do you ever think about making murals? Or because for some reason, when you just mentioned opera, then it brought to my mind in New York when I first ever went there, there was this amazing mural in the subway at 66th Street, Lincoln Center, which is obviously where the Lincoln Center Opera and Ballet Hall is. And it was by Nancy Spiro, who is an artist that I think about sometimes when I'm looking at your work, even though it's aesthetically very different. Mm. But there's a kind of way that Nancy would use motifs and recurring forms, almost linking to kind of Egypt or something. There was this kind of mythical element to her work that I really... something about it resonates in the same way. Would you ever think about doing something not necessarily in the subway, but like a mural or something kind of on a grand scale like that? Because I could really picture it somehow.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah. I mean, hopefully one day I can have a big enough studio or the opportunity to paint a mural where it's kind of this entire like stage drama unfolding with all these women. I mean, that would be, that would be a dream. I would love that.
It's almost like we need to introduce you to an opera house or something do some kind of collaboration.
I can see an animation as well in there. I can totally see like a moving image of these women all kind of grappling over each other.
Oh, yeah, I would love that. I mean, I've thought of animation. I actually once pitched an animation idea to a network, but... yeah, I would love to see my figures in motion in some way. They do. I mean, they seem alive to me, you know, in my mind. And
yeah, they're vibrating, aren't they? That they are definitely alive.
Yeah.
So do you actually like opera? Do you actually listen to it, or is it more of a just a reference?
No, I do. I like opera. I can't claim to be any expert by any means, but it's something I recently got more interested in, just because I think I did realize there was some connection with my work. And in like the intensity of emotion and like raw energy. So it's something I'm like still learning more about, but
that's so interesting.
What do you listen just like to music wise? What's the music you're listening to? Do you listen to music when you paint? And
there's a reference that I made to that, Russell, in the opening introduction, which was Celine Dion.
Oh, that Celine Dion.
Do you listen to Celine Dion when you paint?
Oh my God, sometimes I do, yeah. It's just like, my obsession is real. It's just, I'm so obsessed with her.
But the reason I brought it up is because you described your love of her as being, because it's quite pure what she does. Like, it's not like she has any kind of bad intention, or whether you like it or don't like it, it's like she really believes in what she's doing. And there's a kind of authenticity to Celine Dion, which you like. And I loved that.
Yeah, no, she's just like, I hope I meet her one day. I mean, I went to her show in Vegas and it was unbelievable. And if you've watched my Instagram stories, she's like a big part of them.
Definitely.
But
I love all her hand gestures as well. I remember seeing her in London live and I was just blown away by her strength, which is also interesting if you think about the strength of the women in your paintings. Yeah. She definitely embodies this kind of
And the muscularity of her
strength.
Voice.
Love her.
The match that she does in the Vegas show, she's doing that so many shows a week. But the muscularity in her voice is just like powerful, the power she has.
No, she's totally powerful and just like... also very unique. She seems like a character to me. Like, you don't think of a diva like that as like someone who's also strange and quirky, but I think she is, which makes her even more interesting to me.
She does have a quirkiness, you're right, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I listen, my music taste is wide. I mean, I love dramatic Celine Dion type, you know, ballads, but I also love, I really love like a lot of oldies, like from the 50s and 60s. I would listen to that a lot when my parents would drive me around in the car when I was younger. So like that's the type of music I really love. And
are there any specific musicians?
I love the Turtles. I love Eleanor. That song I've been listening to a lot. And I love Peter, Paul, and Mary. They're probably one of my favorites ever.
Peter, Paul, and Mary. Okay.
Yeah.
Russell's going to get into them now.
Yeah. I just love the name.
I love their harmonies are beautiful. I like classical music. I like some country music. I love like terrible pop music. It just depends what mood I'm in. And,
what music are your characters playing? What's on the sheet music where their nipples are reading?
So those are, that's always, that's till now, that's always been classical music.
Are they real notes?
One of the paintings in that show. They are real. They are copied from real sheet music. Yeah.
Are they?
So they are like a specific, yeah. So it's always a specific song. It's often been Chopin. One of them was Rite of Spring from Stravinsky. I love Chopin. That's another one I love. And I think like for the show, for the cafe, I did imagine kind of they were playing all this like smooth, like jazz from like the 20s, 30s, 40s. I actually curated a playlist for the show for the opening.
I love that.
To play.
So and people who read music, have they ever like recognized the songs?
Not yet. I haven't had that happen to me yet, but
I'm sure it will.
Maybe one day, but it probably will happen one day. I guess like to me, like the classical music makes the most sense to, it doesn't have any words and it's visually as sheet music, often very interesting.
And dramatic at times.
I was also thinking just now about the costumes in operas as well, because the costumes are such a big part of opera. And the way that they use colours to represent emotions or storylines the characters are going through, which is also quite similar in a way, even though your characters are often naked, the colours you use to depict the characters are so distinct that kind of can conjure up emotions or feelings.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I do wonder one day if I ever will depict someone in a costume. If anything, it would be like that type of over-the-top dramatic costume in an opera.
Diva series.
Yes. Yeah, they scream at you from across the room, don't they, that you've said you wanted your paintings to like have a vocal scream with color when people see them across the room.
Yes, love that.
Yeah, I do feel that way. I guess like they don't need a microphone, kind of like opera singers don't need microphones. Right. In some way
they take over the space.
Yeah
Amazing. Well, Anna, we ask every guest that comes on two very important questions. The first one is, if you could do an art heist, if you could steal any work of art in the world, if you could steal any piece of art of work in the world and you could have it all to yourself, what would it be and why?
I think it would be Judith Slaying Holofernes by Artemisia Gentileschi. And I don't know exactly what museum it's in. I think it's in Florence, I believe. But I just love that painting. And yes. It's just like,
it
I think
like?
I'd feel so, it's Judith and another woman cutting off the head of Holofernes, who is like a general. And it's, I mean, she's one of the few like female Renaissance painters that people know of. And it's just like the ultimate depiction of power, I think, female power for me. And it would just be like an unbelievable painting to like have in your house and have like be able to look at every morning.
You'd be quite happy to live with that.
I could live with it. Yeah. I'd be so happy to live with that.
I mean, it's an incredible painting.
Happy to live with that.
Well, it's one of the great paintings
in
history. I've actually been researching her because we're interviewing Rose McGowan, and I was looking into the history of art and depictions of kind of survival, but also of rape and violence. And her work is so important because she's one of the very few artists who were female who actually got to depict a response to rape and torture in court. And that painting that you're talking about was a kind of response to the work I'm going to bring up when we speak to Rose. So it's really interesting. I think she's revolutionary, really.
Yeah, very inspiring. So maybe violent for many people's taste, but for me it would be
happy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, happy. Yeah. Actually, but in a weird way, I think it's more about justice, isn't it? And about stopping abuse of power, which is a, you know, which that painting proves is a historic, you know, it's like within human nature and it's not something new. It's fascinating that she was able to make those paintings and and they still survive now. We have one in the National Gallery in London, which is amazing. Well, the other question we ask every guest is, what is your favorite color? Which I'm very excited to hear from you.
So it's a hard one, but I have to pick yellow.
Really?
Yeah, I like yellow. Not as a color necessarily to wear, but it's a color I love using in my paintings. I'm just drawn to warm colors, and yellow is warm yet transparent, and It's like a source of light. I don't know. It's just, I would probably say it's my favorite color from a painterly point of view.
Does yellow get used a lot in your work?
Yeah. I mean, I would say definitely in every painting. And I don't think I've ever depicted a yellow woman yet, but yeah, I think like, I would say yellow is my favorite color. And it's also like a hard color.
Yeah.
I mean, I really use every color, but I guess I stay away from like lots of browns and more muddy colors I tend not to use, but I like using color in almost like out of the tube kind of in its pure form.
Yeah.
Interesting. Funnily enough, I actually think brown and yellow go really well together. I actually like those two colors.
They do go well together.
You know your paintings, I meant to ask you earlier. So some of them have this almost like drawn element in them. And because you depict hair, kind of like very nostalgic kind of hairstyles somehow, they're almost like sort of 40s, 50s hairstyles.
And the big muffs on all the women as well.
Yeah, totally.
Like, oh, yeah.
like pubic hair, exactly. Yeah. But also the kind of way that it almost, sometimes your paintings, there's one called Be My Baby, and it's almost like a negative image or something, but it's got this very like pencil drawn, it doesn't look like pencil obviously, but it has that element to it. How is that involved? Like that, how did that develop, that kind of way of depicting the characters?
That came from just like years of drawing, and I would say drawing is like my first love with art. And you know, the line, the use of like line and like cross hatching is something I did a lot, just like from looking at comics and looking at old etchings. And I never really put it into my paintings for a long time because I always felt like there was this divide, in a mental divide just for me, for between painting and drawing. And right. And just, yeah, I think that like I was like at a certain point, it actually, I think it started with that painting we discussed earlier, I've developed a taste for my own kind, yes. To just literally draw in my painting and use line in a way that didn't seem out of place in some way, hopefully. So yeah, it's born out of a desire to find this way to merge drawing and painting and acknowledge kind of my influences from graphic comics and graphic culture in a way, and hopefully merge it with my love of painterly things as well.
Well, totally, because there's a big link to the Renaissance and also, like you're saying, etchings and things like that. But that's exactly what it is. It's the etchings, because to me, it reminds me of like very old etchings, but in paint form, which I've never really seen that much. It's a fascinating
like Hogarth, the Hogarth scenes and stuff, Gin Alley and...
Or even Goya etchings. As well and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's something I'm still playing around with and trying to figure out.
Well, like, I think you're succeeding.
Visually,
so please continue.
Yeah.
We're asking everyone very, one more question. Thank you. We're asking everyone one more question. Have you worked out if you have a hidden lockdown talent, something you've worked out since we've been in quarantine that you didn't really know you had before?
I guess like my talent is like, I've learned I really like eating hot dogs. Like a lot.
That is definitely a talent, yes. How many hot dogs are we talking about?
I mean, I've had it for dinner like 4 times last week, which is very unhealthy, but it's...
I'm going to end up in the paintings.
Yeah, probably. I like hot dogs visually as well as taste-wise.
Yes, we have an Americana vibe with the baseball and the hot dogs. And definitely. So what's the dream? Yeah. What is the where would you love to be shown, or what collections would you want to be in? And do you think like that?
I mean, I guess like... My ridiculous dream is like to have a retrospective at the Metropolitan Museum of Art when I'm 69. Because when my mom was going into labor with me, she actually walked through the Met right before I was born.
What?
So to me, like, yeah, to me that museum has like a real like emotional connection, and I would love to have a retrospective there. And yeah, I mean, I guess like, I would, you know, I just want to, I mean, do you want like specific galleries? Like I really admire Blum and Poe as like a gallery, and
Blum and Poe,
a lot of the artists they represent. Yeah.
Carol Dunham.
Like Robert Colescott, Carol Dunham, Henry Taylor. Yeah, just like the dream is to be able to continue to support myself as a painter and show all over the world and and hopefully be accepted and into museums and in and just also have but also have a dialogue and like be known by like regular people who are not artists, I think is also something that I would hope for.
I love that so much about you as well, that that part of wanting to, you know, break down the barriers of the kind of what is perceived to be the old world, which is now particularly, sorry, the art world, which is now possibly going to be an old art world because I feel like after this crisis, people are really reevaluating everything. But I love that openness you have.
Yeah. And I feel like through your painting, you're also pushing what is perceived to be the strength of a woman with these characters, and you're challenging the traditional gender roles, which is something really fresh, I think, in art right now.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I want to finish on a quote that you've had about your paintings. It says, "I want my paintings to go down easy like a pill, only for you to later realise you might get sick." I'm obsessed with that quote.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's like my dark humor there showing.
I love it. I love it. Well, Anna, thank you so much for coming on
Talk Art. Thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been great to speak to you.
For all images and, we were talking about today, please go to our at Talk Art page on Instagram. And Anna, are you on Instagram?
I am, yes.
What's your name on there?
Just my name. At Anna Benaroya. That's it.
Thank you so much. That was really, really fun.
No, thank you. This was fun. Yeah. I always get nervous before these things, but it was fun.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, yes. And hopefully we get to meet you very soon.
I hope so too.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
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 We'll be back very soon.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.